If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the HP Podcast, number 256, your favorite weekly video game podcast, hosted by the most handsome boys you know. I'm Ben, and with me here today is Dave and Brandon. Dave, I wanted to ask you a question real quick. For about a year now, I've been using the intro of the hosted by the most handsome boys you know, and a thought just occurred to me that what if we aren't? Like, is that too existential for the intro?
Yeah, well, I mean, we know it's handsome is a subjective thing, and we were talking about a man named Ryan Gosling before we started recording.
Yeah,
and I think we all know, I'm going to say Ryan Gosling is more handsome than me. We've talked about Idris Elba in the past, and he's more handsome than
right.
me. So I think it's a nice gesture, Ben, but I don't think we're the most handsome. We're the most handsome men on this podcast right now. How about that?
Well. I mean, I see where you're coming from, Dave, but I have one objection. I use the phrase, the most handsome boys you know. Do you know Ryan Gosling?
Define no.
Are you on a first name basis with... Is he on a first name basis with you?
Why did you flip it like that?
Because like, you're on a first name basis with him. You know him by his first name. Does he know you by your
Ryan
first name?
Ryan and I go way back. Yeah. I mean, he is Canadian.
That's true. You guys all know each other.
I think he actually grew up in... So the city I moved from, Burlington, just this past summer, he went to high school there. So connection is closer than you think.
You guys have that coat factory there.
When I first moved to Burlington, I actually said the word Burlington on a podcast, and that's exactly what you said to me is, I love your coat factory. It's a different Burlington.
Well... I also always start the show off, not always, but occasionally I'll start the show off by saying, hello, ladies and gentlemen. And let's be real. It's just gentlemen. Like,
maybe.
I mean, no, it is. I'm sorry to tell you.
Somebody said their daughter was listening with them last week.
Does that count?
Yeah, sure. The female in the audience.
That's true. That is fair.
My wife is upstairs. Yeah. She can hear mumbling, but that's audible. So
that's pretty close to listening, honestly.
Can she hear me mumbling, though?
We're in the handsome Phantom marketing department. We're being really ambitious here with what listeners are.
Speaking of handsome Phantom, Brandon, I'm enjoying your shirt selection this evening.
Swag. This is probably some of the best made shirts I've ever experienced in my entire life. I've wore this like hundreds of times since we got them like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And they just keep going. They just keep going.
8 years ago, you were still in high school. I don't think we got them then. How old are you? It's close enough.
I just had my 10 year reunion, but okay.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But it wasn't 8 years ago. Anyway, close. I'm very literal tonight. Very literal tonight. Well, it's good to see you guys. My handsome Phantom shirt, which, by the way, I think you can still get on Amazon.
Yeah.
I think we still sell them on Amazon. My handsome Phantom shirt is just starting to show some signs of fading. Just starting to. But I have four of them. So in fairness, I have four that I rotate through. They're different sizes, so it depends on if it's a fat day or not, you know.
Now it's vintage. It's got the patina on it.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't wear them as often as I used to. It's funny because people are like, hey, I see you. You wear a lot of stuff. Like my job, I work with LSM, and I have like one of each of our shirts that we've ever made. And people are like, you wear a lot of their merch. And I'm like, that is my entire wardrobe. Whatever I'm doing at the moment is my entire wardrobe. Like, I don't care about fashion. It's just whatever free shirts I have from where I'm working. When I worked at a college, all my shirts were from a college. When I worked at the, when I had the brewery, all my shirts were from the brewery. So yeah, I just, I don't care. I want, I think at some point I want to pull the Steve Jobs, not the part where he didn't pay attention to his doctors and died because he was trying to heal himself, but the part where he just wore one outfit every day. I think I want to try that.
I want to do the other one.
No, I don't think you should.
Well, you can have your thing, Ben, and I can have my thing. Come on, that doesn't seem fair.
I mean, that is, as your friend, I'm going to decline. Real Radic.
I'll take the part where he's a millionaire. I'll take
that billionaire. One probably would be nice, too. Real Radic is in the chat. He says, you guys don't own any designer clothes? To my knowledge, no, I don't.
No. Fine designer. Is Old Navy
Radic
designer?
Would like to know if you own absolutely any Gucci not. Belts.
Yeah.
Is Old Navy designer? Yes, it is now.
Designed to be amazing.
This is the HP podcast. We talk about video games time to time.
What the fuck?
Better close up Burlington Co-Factory where Dave lives. You can also support us over on patreon.com/handsomephantom. We appreciate your support. You can sign up for as little as a dollar a month just to help support your boys. We appreciate it. If you're an audio listener, you get the shows ad-free and a day early if you are a patron. And if you're here live with us or you watch on YouTube, that's totally fine. We appreciate you too. All we ask is that you drop a like. Just drop a like on the video. Thank you. I was giving a pause there to let people have a chance. And if you want to hang out with us, you can go over to handsomephantom.com/discord where you can hang out. And I don't even know what's been going on in there this week because it's been a mess. There was
anime some, slander.
There was some anime stuff. There was some Skull and Bones talk for some reason. And Dave, are we going to talk about Skull and Bones more later?
No, oh, okay. I was not able to play because fuck Ubisoft.
Okay, that I think that's an evergreen statement pretty much.
I can give my my reaction to other people's reaction, but I don't think anybody wants to hear that. So I'll just withhold my in-depth Skull and Bones coverage until the game releases in 8 short weeks. How about that?
Dave, you say that people wouldn't want you to react to reactions, but you know that sort of thing is like incredibly popular on the internet, right?
Very true.
So, and I actually saw an example of this that kind of aggravated me quite a bit. So Tim the Tatman had a YouTube video that had almost 5 million views of him watching somebody else's video.
Yeah.
And I thought that's really lazy, but it happens a lot, unfortunately, in our medium. But luckily, the original video that he was reacting to had 14 million views. So
was it the Beard Meets Food reaction video he did?
No, oh, okay. it was streamers getting caught cheating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good video, but like a minute in, I'm like, I'm not giving you the view.
Yeah,
because this is a very lazy way to create content.
See, I can appreciate a YouTube reaction video because they actually have to be there for the content. The thing that was going around on Twitch, it's not as bad as it was, but for a while on Twitch, people were like, oh, let's do a reaction to this video. And then they would pull up the video and like go do something else. Like XQC was doing it a ton. And he would just literally pull up like a 20-minute video, go do something else, and just farm view hours from it. And I'm like, that's definitely not cool. I can understand. I have a bit of a mixed feeling about the reaction stuff on YouTube, but the reaction stuff on Twitch is just downright stupid most of the time.
Yeah.
You have to be able to add something to it, or correct. It's not really anything new.
Transformative content.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the legal term for it, as far as I understand. Speaking of legalities, let's get into the show. This first one, we're going to talk about the Insomniac leak. And, well, we'll see where it takes us. On December 12th, the Resida ransomware group claimed responsibility for a significant data breach involving Sony's Insomniac games. Holding over 1.3 million files, equivalent to 1.67 terabytes, hostage and demanding $2 million ransom. Following the expiration of the one-week deadline for payment, Resida made good on its threat, releasing the stolen data. The leaked information encompasses internal HR documents, Slack conversations among employees, and critical details about the unreleased Wolverine video game, including level design specifics, characters, and actual screenshots and video. The breach also revealed a signed publishing agreement between Sony and Marvel outlining plans for three upcoming X-Men games. The initial game, Wolverine, is slated for release by September 1st, 2025, with the subsequent titles due by the end of 2029 and 2033, respectively. Resetta justified its actions, this is their justification, by stating their primary motivation was financial gain, targeting game developers they perceived as vulnerable. Despite Sony launching an investigation, Resetta remains defiant, suggesting the matter should be handled internally. Remarkably, Resetta's ransom notice allowed anyone to bid on the data, and it appears that some of it was indeed purchased. While they specified that any acquired data should not be resold, compliance with this rule remains uncertain. It's noteworthy that they exclusively targeted Insomniac Games within Sony, differentiating this incident from a separate attack in May that exposed personal data of 6,800 current and former employees, attributed to the CLOP ransomware group. Now, I don't want to go through necessarily and break down every piece of information. Well, we can't. We don't have time to do that, every piece of information. But I did just want to get high-level thoughts to start out with about this leak, other leaks like it, and go from there. Brandon, let's kick it off with you. I'm sure you heard about this over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of a crazy thing. I mean, 1.67 terabytes is a staggering amount of data to be leaked from one of the biggest gaming companies in existence, I would say. Yeah, it was kind of interesting seeing this come out. I saw a lot of strange discourse about what was leaked. I've watched a little bit, but I'm honestly trying to mostly stay away. I was more interested around the leak and how toxic and stupid gamers are. I mean, we kind of keep going back to this over and over again, but I saw a lot of people talking shit on it who just clearly have no understanding of how game development works whatsoever or what like early builds of games look like. Moreover, I guess I just feel like, you know, aside from the data being leaked, right, personally from these people being leaked, which is truly heinous and an awful thing. I mean, how disappointing is it to have all of your work put out there exceptionally before it's even close? Like, that has to be so just heartbreaking and discouraging. So I really feel for these employees in many ways. I mean, obviously the privacy way, but also, you know, I don't know. It would completely unmotivate me to want to continue. I mean, obviously they're going to, but yeah, it's just, it's really crazy how they justify this. And I saw this on Twitter, so I can't, you know, claim this as my own, but I just don't understand why game companies are the ones that get targeted for this sort of thing. It's just like there's so many other ways and so many other shittier things you could hack. Not that I'm saying it would be good to leak data either way, but like, why? I don't know. Maybe because they have money, because they just had a successful game, but I don't know.
I mean, just to comment on that piece of it, I think it probably happens plenty in other spheres. We just aren't as tuned into it because, well, we're in the gaming sphere, so we see that more. And honestly, I think a lot of other big companies pay them because their information is more confidential and potentially more threatening to their profits than a game leak. But that's just my guess. I don't know. Dave, your high-level thoughts on this leak and leaks like it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot came out, and I'm wondering if Insomniac was targeted specifically just because the result of this leak is that Insomniac had a lot that they had not revealed, not just the gameplay and the screenshots from Wolverine, but that roadmap that kind of revealed a lot about what one of Sony's biggest studios is planning for the next 10 years. And it's not just a slate of games and sequels. That's like a whole universe they're building, and you know, I guess that's if you're a leaker and you have that information, like, you're in a very high leverage position. So I suspect they probably thought they were in a good position to actually get money from out of Sony and Insomniac. So yeah, I mean, it's a shitty situation. I agree with Brandon that there's a lot of stupid people out there, and I bet IGN already has a review in progress posted. On the other side, like, I did actually watch the footage, like all of it. I don't normally engage in leaked stuff, but I was generally curious to see what direction they were going with Wolverine. And I did want to say that it was kind of unique seeing a vertical slice. I've heard that term used so many times, and I thought I knew what it was, but then when I saw what a vertical slice actually is in action, I thought, oh, okay, this makes sense. So, you know, we get a rough idea of what animation looks like and what some of the gameplay is. And I thought it was interesting that, like, they actually had text showing, like, where certain pieces of narrative would be input into the game in the final version. So I thought, you know, the one positive for me anyways is I thought it was a pretty interesting look into the game making progress, especially for a big game like this. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, by the time Wolverine comes out, no one's going to remember this. So the idiots, the mouth breathers who think this is an actual representation of what the game is going to be, they also have short memories. So yeah,
it's definitely, just to reiterate what you guys said, it sucks for anybody's work to get hacked and to be shown early. And obviously tons of personal data for the actual employees. Who knows? Obviously, I'm not going to go dig through it all. And those who aren't going to have good intentions, most likely. But the actual personal data of anyone getting leaked sucks. I would assume, you know, all sorts of social security numbers, all that kind of stuff. Everything's probably in there to some extent if they had any of their financial data. But with that said, Dave, you're right about being able to see some of that work in progress stuff. And there are that is a vertical slice. There's also the vertical slice, which is like when somebody takes stuff to a show, like to E3 or something, or Long Live E3, but to PAX, where they would they'll basically make a specific section of the game and just use that vertical slice of the game and really hone that piece out. And the rest of the game's still, you know, in shambles. But they've really refined that piece so that they can show it off. And it's clear that what was part of what was leaked was definitely like, here's a collaboration or a, whatever the word is, a combination of a bunch of the different stuff that we were doing. And we want to show it off internally. And I think it would be cool if developers did release more of that stuff ahead of time. I mean, I'm not asking for us to see stuff from games that are 6 years away or something, but I think it would be cool to see some more of that behind the scenes stuff, early stuff. And even if that's after the game comes out, that's fine with me, obviously. But I think seeing that stuff is really neat. It sucks that this is the way we got to get that experience, especially for those developers. But I do think it's really cool.
Sony and Insomniac were really just like, we do not negotiate with terrorists. They were like,
yeah,
leak it, I guess. I don't know. They're doing the American way, I guess. But
most of the time, the hackers will have some sort of proof to show, like, hey, we have something that has definitely not been released externally, and they'll show
Wolverine's finger.
They put Wolverine on the phone.
Yeah, give me the money. Well, that was a Batman impression, I think. But
this is close.
Yeah, they usually show that off, and I think that, you know, in this case, I have to speculate that they decided if we negotiate. If we give them the $2 million or whatever amount of money, whatever thing it is that they want, in a leak case like this, then it's only going to encourage more ransom type things.
True. Yeah, true.
And at the end of the day, it's not like they, you know, released entire plot points and they didn't spoil the game. And I mean, some people would say just knowing the movement type is spoiling the game. And to some extent, I understand that because I'm very sensitive to spoilers. But realistically, if that's what they knew they had, then I can understand. If they knew they had all of their employees' personal data, maybe the decision would have been a little different. I don't know. Maybe that's just a hazard of the job, I guess you could say. But yeah, you're right, Brandon. It's kind of like we don't negotiate with terrorists point of view. And because $2 million for a giant corporation is nothing.
Yeah.
But it's more. I think it was probably more about the stance they were taking than anything.
Sure.
I did want to talk about. Sailor in chat says that roadmap is so sad, and then Radic says I'm hyped for Venom and Ratchet at least. which of course he's hyped for Venom. I'm also hyped for Ratchet. Venom, I'm sure it'll be fine. It's Insomniac making a game with crazy movement, so it'll be great. But I wanted to ask you guys, I don't know if you saw the roadmap or not, but it details it all the way out for a decade-ish, and shows a lot of Marvel games in there. And that kind of ties in with number two, which we'll get to a little bit later. But what do you think of that, Dave, as far as, you know, what it looks like Insomniac's going to be working on for a while, and you can go in as granular or not as you want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really excited about this. I love the concept of a universe, and I don't know if I really kind of grasped it before the MCU, and I don't know if we've ever kind of seen it on a scale, like, or, you know, kind of done that successfully as we have in film with the MCU. But I don't know, I just love, like, kind of watching all the movies, and I think my favorite thing about a universe is seeing either main characters or secondary characters making, like, cameos in other people's films or games in this case. And then, you know, building up to that crescendo that was, again, I'm sorry, I have to make the comparison to the MCU, which was the Avengers. So I really, really like this idea of a bunch of, like, interconnected video games that will ultimately lead into some bigger sort of all-encompassing video game. I think that would be really cool. And I like that they're doing it with Marvel in this sort of more focused version of Marvel, where, you know, it seems like we're kind of honing in on Spider-Man, Wolverine, X-Men, and maybe some of the villains in the Spider-Man universe. In the roadmap, there was two or three that were just identified as, like, new IP, mm-hmm. and it didn't really have any name attached to it. So I'm curious what that is. You guys kind of mentioned the Venom game a little bit. That hasn't been confirmed. It's still rumored. So maybe that's one of them. I'm wondering if we're going to get, like, a Sinister Six game.
Just to clarify, Venom was on there separate from the new IP.
It was.
And separate. I think that anything from Marvel would be considered an existing IP. It wouldn't be like making Ben and Dave's Fabulous Game number 4, you know.
Right.
Like,
so then maybe these new IP aren't actually part of this universe. Right. Or maybe they are.
Yeah, they could be.
It's exciting to see what they would come up with. The piece that I was less kind of excited about was the multiplayer stuff. Mm-hmm. I think Insomniac does such a great and charming job with focused single player narrative experiences. And I trust that they could make a very high quality multiplayer game, but just me as a gamer, I really appreciate what they do with single player stuff. So that, you know, I'd be curious to see what it actually kind of develops into. But I think on the surface, I'm less excited about that, but more, you know, really anticipating what this whole Insomniac Marvel game universe actually kind of turns into. So again, it's shitty that the leak came out this way, but it is kind of cool to see this stuff. And a benefit for Insomniac and Sony is, like, you know, there's a lot of people who are really excited about what they learned earlier this week. You know, on the negative side, though, that Microsoft knows their plans a lot earlier than they had planned on kind of rolling that out there. So, but in any case, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where Sony and Insomniac goes with this.
Yeah. Brandon, I know you're not a big superhero guy, but you have been an enjoyer of the Spider-Man games and Spider-Man and Miles Morales and all the like. Do you have any affinity for the X-Men? Is that something that excites you?
Yeah, I mean, I could totally be interested in it. I think the great part about Insomniac's games is that I really enjoy them. And if the game plays well enough and it's made well enough and, you know, the ideas and the concepts are put together well enough, that it doesn't really matter what the IP is to me. It could be anything. So that's kind of where I've stood on it and where I'm going to continue to stand as far as I'm concerned. Insomniac makes great games. And on the inverse of what Dave was saying, I actually am pretty excited for the multiplayer because multiplayer is like my thing. You know, single player experiences, I enjoy them a lot, but they pale in comparison to the amount of hours that I put into multiplayer games. So the thought of Insomniac breaking into that stratosphere is exciting for me. And I think something that we often associate multiplayer with is, you know, free to play, microtransactions, but games don't have to come out that way necessarily. I feel like there can be multiplayer components without that. So I would hope that sort of thing wouldn't be added, because I don't think it would be a great fit. And we've seen good companies try to implement things like that. So I hope they would think twice about it. But I don't know. I'm pretty excited about the multiplayer stuff. And the roadmap looks cool. I mean, I only watched a little bit of the Wolverine stuff, and it looks cool as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's I think it's encouraging to see that Marvel, who is Disney, would give them they trust Insomniac enough to give them such a big chunk of everything. And I mean, honestly, who else is doing as good of a job with their properties as Insomniac is?
No one.
Right. But it lends... There was something in there about how games have to... The games within this contract have to sell a certain amount of copies, and I forget the exact number, or the IP reverts back to Disney, and they can, you know, sell it to somebody else to use. And it makes me wonder, or renegotiate the terms, I don't know, however it works, but it makes me wonder, one, about Xbox's place in with Blade. You know, they're making... Xbox is making Blade... that's within the Marvel universe. Not, we didn't see it in the MCU, of course, but it is part of the Marvel universe. And it makes me wonder, one, will they reach those thresholds? Because do subscription sales count the same as subscription purchases count the same as actual sales? And then the other thing is, Dave, you kind of alluded to, you know, Xbox gets to see what they're working on. Do they, if they're both making Marvel games, and you would assume Marvel has stated that they want all of their properties to work together from here on out, now that they have enough money to actually do them themselves and have to farm them out to Fox or whoever, do they already know what's going on? Are they working on something? Like, will there be some cross-pollination to be like, hey, in this universe, this is what's happening. The Blade game needs to fit in there too. It makes me kind of wonder, like, are we seeing some sort of, you know, Marvel-Sony... Fox crossover like we did with Spider-Man and the Avengers with video game production companies as well. That was kind of just a mouthful of wonder, but I don't know if you guys have anything to... It's kind of just dreaming and speculation, I think, at this point. But
yeah, I mean, I just want to kind of note something that Radix said in the chat where, you know, the budgets are so big and Marvel's going to get a huge cut from these games, but $10 million in sales, I think, is perfectly reasonable for games from Insomniac, and we've already kind of seen how successful these titles are. The Spider-Man titles, whereas we've got three of them now, and they've all been incredibly successful. We've already got a really, really good install base of PlayStation 5s, and I assume all these games are probably going to be on PlayStation 5, if not most of them. So I think $10 million at a minimum is reasonable. So if that's kind of the bet, if that's the gamble that Sony and Insomniac are making with these games, and I'm talking about each one individually, I think it's reasonable. And again, as I said before, like, if they're all intertwined in part of a universe, then people are going to feel that much more of a connection and need to play them one after the other, just like, you know, we did with the first few phases of the MCU in theaters. So yeah, it's ambitious, but I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I don't know that there will be any sort of crossover. I feel like these companies like to keep their things separately purposefully. But that certainly would be nice, where these big companies could play nicer together. If we could get something that was more complex and wide stretching over multiple kind of companies, that would be something. But
yeah,
I don't know. It does make you think about the Blade and just the Marvel in general kind of double dip in here. So
yeah,
I want to see Clank fight Blade.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. We did see Clank, discussion of a new Ratchet and Clank game, and it's really interesting because, you know, it shows that they showed that they lost money on the last Ratchet and Clank, but is that because it wasn't a great game, or is it because there was such a low install base, or was it the comment? I mean, I think it was a good game. I platinumed it. I played a lot of it. It was shorter, but it was still fun. But I think it coming out so early in the life cycle both helped and hurt it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me to see how poorly it did commercially.
Yeah, honestly, I thought the game was amazing. I was surprised to see that. And I would imagine, I don't know, it kind of was like, especially at the beginning when the titles were so low for PS5, it kind of was a console seller. As far as I'm concerned, you know, they were flexing the SSD. So yeah, I don't know. It is a little strange to me that it didn't do better, but I mean, they obviously see something in the IP or they wouldn't be continuing to pursue it. So
yeah, launch titles are always a gamble, I think. Yeah. And that's why I think, especially with this generation, we saw so many cross-generational titles.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
I bet Sony kind of ate the loss a little bit on this one.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a reasonable thing to assume. Now, Radic, and I don't know if this has been confirmed, but in the chat, Radic is saying, updated information has it that Ratchet was profitable. There's a slide from Insomniac that states this. I don't have any reason to doubt Radic on that. So good if it was. Still, I had a great time with it if it wasn't. And Hriz says, I think Sony and Insomniac knew it was a launch game and needed it, so I bet they weren't worried if it was a loss leader. I mean, it was definitely one of the only things to play at the beginning. One of the main reasons, the only new games to have a PS5 for at the time. So definitely you could consider it a loss leader in that way. When I owned the restaurant, the brewery, we used to have a thing called a pint of bacon, which was literally just, so many people would come in and be like, what is this? And I'm like, it's a pint glass full of bacon. And they're like, what? I want that. And I'm like, right. But it cost us like almost exactly what we sold it for. But we felt like we could, because bacon was always fluctuating so crazily. It was like, well, we can't really justify selling it for, we can't justify for selling it more than we are, but we can't make any money on it selling it for what we are. But what we found was that people would get that. And 100% of the time, every time somebody ordered it, it was just an appetizer. And they would also buy multiple drinks. Like, I think it was like an average of 2.1 drinks or something like that. The people who ordered that.
Here's a pint of salt.
Here's a pint of salt. You need a couple beers and probably something else to eat to wash it down with. So loss leaders are certainly a business strategy, and maybe it was that, maybe it wasn't. But Insomniac, regardless, it definitely sucks they got hacked. They've been definitely the forefront of Sony production when it comes to this generation. So it's been a good time. A good time for them, a good time for consumers, a good time for video games, and stop hacking people. But also, if you're going to, don't get their personal information, right? Like, yeah. That's the part that sucks. I mean, I'm sure they just went in and grabbed as much as they could, the hackers did, but it sucks that it's honked, the train has honked 7 times. It's supposed to be 3. Legally, they're only required to do it 3. It's honked 7 times.
Dude, if I was behind that horn, I would be laying on that shit. Just pray that I never start driving trains near your house, Ben.
I'll pray for that for more than one reason. More than one reason, buddy.
I would be tooting all the way down the road.
It's funny. There is a guy. I assume it's a guy. It's a person who works there. And he's the one who drives like overnight. And you can tell like when he's working because it's clear he's just bored. And I can like faintly hear them like down near Dustin's house. There's a crossing down there too. And so they have to beep up there and then beep down here. And when that guy's coming, I know it because I hear from far away, bah, 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 bah. Like he's just so bored trying to keep himself awake, driving right. The train at 3 a.m. He's just gotta, it doesn't bother me anytime except for when I'm on the mic. Then of course it's annoying, but Hriz also says, would be interested to see how profitable Sackboy was. Sackboy was only partially funded by Sony, I think, but I would have to imagine it didn't do amazing, but I bet it was profitable still. I bet it was profitable.
Yeah, I don't think it did nearly as well as they thought it was going to.
No. It had been too long for the love to still be there. Speaking of profitable, let's move into number 2. Insomniac Games' recent ransomware leak exposed a comprehensive financial document detailing the development cost, sales, and profits of every game the studio worked on. Notably, Sunset Overdrive, a 2014 Xbox and PC exclusive, generated a mere $567 in profit despite selling approximately 9 million units for approximately $50 million. The leak sheds light on the challenging economics of game development, emphasizing the financial struggles even a well-received title might face. This revelation contrasts with Insomniac's pivot to Marvel projects, suggesting a strategic move towards more lucrative ventures. Now, Sunset Overdrive is, I'm a fan of that game. I was a fan of that game back in the day. I have gone back to it for a couple hours here and there over the years, and I'm always continuing to be a fan of it. And it's such a widely talked about and beloved game by people who played it that it's hard to imagine the game made literally $567 in profit. And I don't know, dev math is a little bit different sometimes. Maybe marketing's wrapped up in that too, which it always is. But either way, as far as the tax man is concerned, it made $567 in profit. And I kind of want to talk about specifically that game, but also just about the state of game development when a game that has such a huge cultural impact can be, by all other terms, considered a flop, marginally a flop. Like it basically was a flop, right? It basically broke even. So I don't know, Dave, what do you think the state of the industry is like when a game that's so beloved does so poorly and basically costs them money?
Yeah, I seem to recall I played Sunset Overdrive, and I loved it just like you, Ben. But I feel like it was one of those games that a lot of people talked about and it got a lot of coverage, but I don't think that many people actually bought it and played it. Remember, this was an Xbox One game and not that many people actually had Xbox Ones. So I'm not that surprised to hear that it was overall a flop. But in terms of the state of the industry, like even going back to 2014, so 9 years ago, almost 10 years now, I feel like if Sunset Overdrive couldn't succeed then it's got to be even worse now when you look at just how dominated this industry is by free-to-play and known quantities and existing IPs, where, you know, we talk a lot about how we get really excited about new IP, but, you know, when you look at it from a business perspective, it's almost always a bet that does not pay off. Mm-hmm. And that's really unfortunate because, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later on the show about a game called Sea of Stars. And that's a gamble. That's a gamble that ultimately paid off. But 90% of gambles just don't. So, you know, the more we see games like this not sell and not make a profit or just make such a razor sharp profit means that, you know, we're just not going to see new IP like we want to. So it's kind of sad, and it really, really sucks because, again, I'm with you, Ben. Like, Sunset Overdrive was so fun, and it was so different. But it wasn't a third-person shooter, and it wasn't Call of Duty, and it wasn't Madden. It wasn't the stuff that sells millions of copies every single year, so people don't want to spend their money on it. So it's just it's a little bit sad, and again, just to reiterate, I think it's gotten worse because a lot's changed since 2014, so yeah. But yeah, $576 or whatever the number was. That's insane. I do agree. I think that's probably been stated in a certain way for, as you said, Ben, tax purposes.
Sure. Yeah.
But and again, that's after everybody gets paid, right, and all your expenses are paid off. So it's not like people, you know, walked out the door and got fired over that. But it's still like that game should have made a lot more money than it did. And I always wonder what that game would have, how it would have been remembered if it were multi-platform or a PlayStation exclusive, because I feel like it would have done well anywhere. It was so much fun, but yeah, it's too bad.
And that game now, let me just double check my facts here.
Did you play Sunset Overdrive, Brandon?
I played a little bit of it, not much.
Okay, so that I was right. That game was published by Xbox Studios. It is now on Game Pass. It's still on Game Pass. And I would imagine since Xbox owns the game, that's the way everybody used to work back in the day, that, you know, Insomniac's not seeing any future dollars or current dollars from that. But I do wonder, now that it's on Game Pass, what's it like? How many hours have people spent playing that game, spending their subscription money on or whatever, that maybe years later now, is it a success? And I'm going to talk a little bit more about subscriptions, which I'm a fan of, just for the record, but subscription services later in the show when we talk about Sea of Stars. But I just wonder, you know, long term, has that game actually made more money than it made initially? Is that even, I mean, that's possible, certainly. So it all depends on how you do the math, of course, but interesting stuff regardless. It definitely, Brandon, makes a lot of sense. Like Dave was saying, that, you know, Insomniac, an amazing studio who's made awesome games and continues to make awesome games, makes a lot of sense why they're dipping into the well again with Marvel and continuing that licensing. I mean, look at something like the Fast and the Furious game that came out a couple years ago. It was utter garbage. It was like a generation behind. The game sold a bunch. The Fast and the Furious movies, there's a reason there's like 24 of them, because people keep lining up to go see them. And we see continually that sequels of big established IP are doing just as well or better than their origin story stuff. So the whole, you know, we make fun a lot of the licensed movie tie-ins and everything that happened a lot during the PS2 and PS3 era, a lot during the PS2 era. But those games were what made money and made it so that people could keep their jobs and keep making games. And it's you know, I don't know. It kind of sucks, but...
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely does suck. I feel like Dave kind of said it, and we've said it before on the show, how much of a gamble making games is, period. I mean, clearly when you have a game like Sunset Overdrive that is unanimously praised, and you see stuff like this, it kind of puts things into perspective. And I wish we lived in a world where new IP could blossom, and that certainly does happen. I mean, look at Guerrilla, look at Sucker Punch. You know, new IP can blossom, but for every one or two new IPs that blossom, there's about 200 or 300 that fucking just are dead on arrival. So yeah, it's, I wish that we didn't have to tie into IP to ensure success, but that's just the way the world works. It's like when people know about things, they're more keen to engage with that thing. Especially something like Marvel. I mean, one of the biggest intellectual property holders in existence at this point. But yeah, I mean, kind of some interesting news. I honestly would never have guessed that before reading it here. So,
and I mean, I know I'm part of the problem, because I'll see a new IP and I'm like, ah, that looks just like this game.
Right.
And it's like, well, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, yeah, occasionally you get something that totally transforms the way that gaming works, but very rarely.
Yeah,
very rarely.
Rarely.
So it's an interesting story. Radix says Sunset Overdrive was profitable enough for a Little Caesars pizza party.
Dude, how many Little Caesars pizzas are you? How many people are you having at this party? Because $567 at Little Caesars would be like enough to feed this side of the state where I live.
Little Caesars is like $6.75 for a pizza now.
Ben, when I was a kid, $500.
I know.
That's 100 pizzas, 8 slices a piece, bro. Come on, do the math here. That's a lot of pizza.
Brandon, I've seen you eat. That's not enough to feed you for 2 days.
You ain't wrong.
Yeah. Also, Why You Should Play says, seeing all these financials that have come out across the larger PlayStation ecosystem reinforces why niche studios like Arkane are doing big licensed IP. And yeah, that's the sad reality for sure. Let's move on to the next thing. This is about a patent. Number three, Sony's new patent. Sony aims to revolutionize gaming difficulty with a recently issued patent. Now, of course, I'll preface this with saying we know that tons of patents get filed just so they can protect them and maybe never even intended on being used, but they're working on something, so they got to patent it. Introducing real-time skill-based adaptive difficulty calibration. The patent titled Adaptive Difficulty Calibration for Skills-Based Activities in Virtual Environments, that's a mouthful, proposes a system that dynamically adjusts a game's difficulty based on a user's skill level. As players navigate challenges, the difficulty evolves organically, increasing gradually without compromising specific challenges perceived as weaker areas for the player. Sony envisions utilizing collected data to assess a user's performance level against expected benchmarks, automatically adjusting game difficulty parameters when deviations occur. The patent introduces an innovative approach to enhance player engagement by tailoring difficulty to individual skills during gameplay. Dave, I don't really like this idea. I mean, I think it could be cool for a game, maybe. Like, that's the whole catch of the game. But I don't want a lot of games like this. What about you?
It's definitely an interesting concept. I am having a hard time trying to imagine how it would actually translate into a gameplay experience. The one kind of game where I think it would be excellent is sim racers. So like Gran Turismo 7, this would be awesome, because I find the AI really sucks, and if I turn it up a little bit, then suddenly it's not fun anymore. So if, you know, the game was actually able to learn and kind of adjust, then I think that'd be cool. But I also was trying to think of it from the lens of just like a single player narrative game, and I just, again, had a really hard time imagining how it would work, but I also understand why it makes sense. I always play on normal difficulty, but what's normal to me may be normal, not normal to everybody else, but we as gamers adapt to that. So I think this is Sony's attempt potentially to try and make it so the game adapts to the player. So maybe there's a future where there are games where you don't have to pick a difficulty, you know, not like a From Software game where there is no difficulty. It's just, it's what it is, but you know, it there is no difficulty selection because the game just kind of adapts to you. And I think that's an interesting concept. And again, it's just tough to picture because I feel like most well-designed games kind of scale difficulty appropriately. So, you know, normal difficulty starts off fairly easy, and by the time you get to the end of the game, it's more challenging than when it started, but you've learned a lot about how the game mechanics work. So it is more difficult on, you know, objectively, but because you've learned how to play the game, it isn't that much more difficult. So I don't know whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. I have to see it in practice. Again, in a sim racer like Gran Turismo, I think it would be amazing. And we've seen Sophie in Gran Turismo, so I wonder if this patent is somehow connected to that, or, you know, it was born out of that. The one glaringly positive I can pull from this is that I think it is a great way for developers to learn how people are playing their games. Not by, you know, understanding the number of times they clicked on a prompt or, you know, went into a certain hub area or something like that, but more understanding and seeing how the game reacted to the way they were playing.
Right.
And I think that's a really cool thing. So, yeah, I'm interested to see where Sony kind of takes this and what kind of games it actually, it pops up in. But, yeah, interesting patent news for sure.
Brandon, you know what this sounds like to me?
I know exactly.
It sounds a little bit like skill-based matchmaking, but in a single-player game.
SBMM ruins everything. Now, this is interesting. I just get shit-faced one night playing Elden Ring 2, and then it just doesn't let me boot the game. It's like, sorry, you did poorly enough that you should probably just play something else. Yeah, it's certainly an interesting idea. I don't know. I feel like the magic of deciding your own difficulty is that you could be playing, and I've done this many times, where I'm playing a game that's maybe it's older, maybe I'm just coming back to it from, you know, a long break, and I'm playing on normal originally, right? And then I'm like, man, I don't know. This is kind of pissing me off a little bit. I just want to have fun because that's what video games are about. Even though the internet sometimes doesn't think it, video games are about having fun and being entertained. So I would just be worried that would kind of... We joke about SBMM, but I feel like some of the aggravation around it is warranted because people just want to have fun. And when you're not doing well, you're not having fun. So what are you just going to do really shitty in the game until your difficulty drops? I don't know. It's weird. And somebody said something in chat that I actually find pretty interesting. Gaston said, I think patenting game mechanics is a hard line that shouldn't be crossed. And yeah, honestly, he's kind of right. I think that kind of leads way to other things that could be more nefarious for consumers than even this. So
is difficulty a game mechanic, though?
I think the adjustment of difficulty on the fly is...
It would change the game. I mean, it could change health. It could change bullet damage, you know, or pacing.
It's interesting that the only other time we've really seen an instance of this was with the Nemesis system that WB did with, was it WB? With Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And we saw that. It was a cool idea, absolutely. And then they patented it, and so therefore no one else could do it. And also no one else, they haven't done it either. We've never seen it again in any of their other games. And that really sucks because, you know, for a game to have such a cool mechanic introduced and then barred from everyone else using it and then never used again, it's like, come on, man. Like, just let them... Everybody borrows from somebody else. There's nothing new under the sun, like we said earlier. So I definitely think, like I said earlier, that I could imagine this being really cool for a game. Like, the whole... You know, the whole catch of this game is that the better you are, the harder it is. That's a cool idea, but I don't think I would want it just to be in any game I'm playing.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, if it were just a game mechanic, I feel like it might not be worthy of a patent if it's just a game.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And like you said earlier, I mean, this could literally be nothing sandwich, but it is a very interesting idea that I hadn't even previously thought was something that was even a thing. But apparently Sony's at it again.
Yeah. Sailor jumped in to say Namco got the patent for interactable loading screens. So that's a correction there. I did not know that. That's interesting. Huh. I never thought about that. I've never seen an interactable loading screen outside of like some older games.
Yeah, this might have some bad implications, but we'll see.
Yeah. It's about the implication.
Right.
Number four. Sabotage Studios celebrates Sea of Stars, its turn-based RPG, surpassing 4 million players since its August 28th debut. Available on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation, and Xbox platforms, the game received acclaim winning Best Indie Game at the Game Awards and the Golden Joysticks and BAFTA recognition. The RPG garnered over 25 perfect review scores, becoming a top pick in the Critics' Best of 2023 list. The Sabotage Studios co-founder expressed gratitude. I write their names sometimes, not remembering that I'm going to have to pronounce them later. Sabotage Studios co-founder expressed gratitude and excitement for fan support, hinting at the upcoming DLC, Throes of the Watchmaker. Sea of Stars unfolds in the Messenger's universe. Dave, you reviewed The Messenger, and you've also played Sea of Stars. How do you feel about 4 million players for the game?
It's great. Again, we talked about so many new IPs not succeeding, so it's great to see one like this succeeding, especially considering it's coming from sort of an indie studio. So yeah, if you haven't played Sea of Stars, I strongly recommend you go check it out, either buy it or it's on PS Plus Extra and it's on Game Pass, so lots of different ways for you to take advantage of it. I did not like The Messenger, and I do like this game. So I'm very excited to see. This is only their second game, so let's see where they go from here. But Sabotage, I think, is actually giving us, they've already announced DLC for Sea of Stars, yeah. So that's really cool. But yeah, 4 million players. So again, this is a game that launched day one on subscription services. 4 million players is good for any game. Yeah. So I mean, that's good, let alone it being an indie retro title. But I did a little bit of digging and found that this game actually sold 250,000 copies in its first week. Right. So still moved quite a few copies for a studio that predictably has pretty low kind of operating costs compared to some of the bigger studios. So it's nice to see a new IP come out as a success story, especially when Sea of Stars came out very close to Starfield.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they really had the luxury of picking and choosing where they came out. Not that there was a convenient place for a retro indie game to come out this year, but coming out on Game Pass that close to Starfield was kind of a tall task. So I'm glad to see that this paid off for the studio and the game. So yeah, play Sea of Stars at some time. I got to go finish it. Maybe I'll do that this holiday.
Brandon, I know you haven't played Sea of Stars yet. I fell prey to the thing Dave was just talking about where I was playing Baldur's Gate and I really wanted to play Sea of Stars, but I knew Starfield was coming out like a literal week later. And so I was like, I'll get this to Sea of Stars later. I still haven't gotten to it. I will.
Damn.
But I haven't gotten to it yet. But anyway, I wanted to talk more with you, and we'll go back to Dave too, talking about the reality of 4 million players is a lot. It's a feat. Not going to take that away from them. They've made money because they got two subscription services to pick them up, and they sold at minimum 250,000 copies, probably by now closer to 500,000 or maybe even a little more after the awards bump. You do sell most of your games in the first 2 weeks it's out. That's a pretty well-known fact. But what does players mean in the scope of... Let's not even get into financial aspects of it, because I assume they got paid, you know, for being on the two biggest subscription services in the gaming sphere. But when you talk about potentially 3.5 million players playing this on a subscription service, potentially, you know, I'm just throwing that out there.
Right.
That means they could have played anywhere from booting it up and seeing the start screen to they got 300 hours in it somehow.
Right.
That's such a hard number to quantify, and such a, I don't know actually if I should give it, like, does it deserve the accolades? Wow, you did such a great job. Or right. Is it like, okay.
I think that it does, honestly, because you're right. It isn't just straight up 3 million people purchased the game. But what that does do for them is that means 3 million people had eyes on their IP that maybe wouldn't have otherwise. Even if they did just boot it up, they saw something, you know? And I think that that is a net positive for the studio in the long run. It might not net them right now, but what it does is ensure that the next thing that comes out will have some sort of reception from at least 4 million people because they have some experience with it at all. So even though, you know, at the end of the day, the numbers guys probably aren't really too concerned with 4 million players, it really does mean a lot for the studio. Because I think that just exposure to the product at all is sometimes, you know, it might be a future play is what I'm trying to say.
Dave, what do you think?
Brandon's right. It's the second game from the studio. So if you have players that are, you know that the quality of the product you put out there is good, then, you know, a good chunk of them are going to remember. So I think there's always value in that. And I think it allows the studio to kind of make a slightly bigger game next time. I wonder what it kind of does for that strategy of launching on multiple subscription services day one, because I don't think that's something we've seen a whole lot of, but it's proven successful in this case. But again, it only works if you have a game that predictably didn't cost that much to actually develop. So it doesn't work for everybody, but we don't really know what each individual studio makes off per like download or per 10,000 downloads or whatever it is. So it's kind of a meaningless number, especially across two separate services. Like, we might have an inkling of what Microsoft pays for this sort of thing, but we don't, you know, 4 million players, is that 1 million on PlayStation and 3 million on Game Pass? Probably not, but you know, what's the split? It's really kind of a meaningless number to us, but it's still a good number to work from, and it means probably good things for future titles. And again, I kind of mentioned the DLC there. I assume the DLC would be paid. So even if you got the vanilla version of the game on subscription service, maybe if you wanted to play more, then you need to purchase the DLC separately. So that might be the play there too, is, you know, launch a really good game on subscription services, but also have really good follow-up content to add on that people pay for just out of pocket. So
So I can't go too much into this. So full disclosure, for those who don't know, I do work for an indie game studio. I am the one who deals with the platforms. So I have had some discussions in the past about subscription services. We've had games on, back when Games with Gold was a thing, we had games on there. So I know some of those inner workings, but I don't know all of them. And I'm just curious, we've seen from leaked documents, we've seen from leaks that are out there, and I think people have talked about it before. I know people have talked about it before. So it is common knowledge that most of the time when you're on one of these subscription services, there's some sort of clause built in that you can't appear on another subscription service during a specific time. So you would assume there had to be some sort of concession for Sea of Stars to be able to launch on both, whether that was financial or otherwise. Maybe they saw that it was going to be such a great game that they both decided, who cares, we want it on our subscription service. I'm really curious how that looks as far as, you know, I assume both parties, all three parties really had to be fully aware of the fact that it was going to be on the other subscription services and had to be able to make good with that. So that's a really interesting fact to me too. We're getting way off the accolade of Sea of Stars selling 4 million copies, I know, but I wanted to bring it up just because it opens up a broader conversation that's really interesting about not only what does players mean, but also how do you launch on two subscription services that usually don't allow you to do that? That's really fascinating to me. So if you guys have anything to add, you're welcome to, but I was just stating that for my own sake, I guess. I didn't write this up because, just honestly, I forgot. But I just briefly wanted to mention, in between last week's show and this week's show, it feels like forever ago, but The Last of Us Online was canceled. Straight up, just canceled one night. I think it was on a Thursday night. And we don't need to go over the whole thing, but I just wanted to get your guys' impressions on that. Dave, we'll kick it off with you. Did you get a chance to read the release that Naughty Dog put out? And what do you think about The Last of Us Online, as they were calling it internally, getting getting kicked to the curb.
Yeah, I didn't read the whole release, but I read bits and pieces and kind of gleaned some of why this may have happened. And it really just sounds like this game grew a little bit too big for its breeches and scared some of the higher ups at Naughty Dog off. You know, The Last of Us is a great series. It's got a lot of people who love to play it. And we'll continue to buy the single player games for a long time. But I think when this multiplayer game started out in life, it was supposed to be a mode that launched with The Last of Us Part 2. And then it started to grow and became its own thing. And it just kind of feels like it grew to a point where, you know, it needed to reasonably compete on a daily basis with the other multiplayer shooters that are in the industry. So again, Last of Us is great as a single player game, but I don't know if an online standalone mode could compete day to day with Apex and Call of Duty and Fortnite. And maybe part of it is just like people have seen what Fortnite's grown into, and Naughty Dog felt this isn't going to be profitable long term. So it feels like it just kind of grew to a point where it wasn't sustainable. And they Naughty Dog decided that the easiest thing to do was just to walk away from it, which I'm okay with, because in the press release, I think they did note that they want to focus on new IP. We've talked a lot about new IP and how we kind of favor it. So I'm happy to hear that new IP is getting sort of preference over a kind of spin-off multiplayer experience that me personally, I wouldn't really play too much of. So yeah.
Brandon, what do you think about The Last of Us Online being canceled?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been a supporter of this being canceled for a while now. I feel like it was kind of a slow death. I'm sad to see it mostly because I am a multiplayer fan. I think they could make something cool. I think that I do agree that it probably became something bigger than they had intended, and that the environment and the ecosystem kind of require that now. But what I would say as someone who plays multiplayer games is it doesn't need to be that way. Kind of what I said earlier, it's like we've been playing Lethal Company. It's like, does it need to be like all-encompassing? Does it always need to have updates? Does it... And, you know, obviously updates in general, but like content updates. So I don't know. I'm not super sad to see this go, but I'm noticing a trend in gaming. I guess they just don't want to risk it. And I guess that's completely fair. And they're going to stick to what they're good at. And that's completely fair. But, you know, it might have been interesting to see what they got. And we didn't really see almost anything. So RIP, The Last of Us Online. Probably won't be missed that much, but... Yeah, they'll make something cooler and it'll be completely fine. So I'm not that worried about it.
I'm sure there were a lot of circumstances leading to this, of course. But one of the main things they marked in the release that they put out when they canceled it was that I forget the exact wording, but something along the lines of we had to make a decision of whether we wanted to be a live service, essentially company, or continue to make our single player games that everybody loves. And that's really telling to me that one, it's like, why did it take them so long to realize this was going to be, that was going to be the case, that they were going to have to always be an online company then? Or why did they think that, you know, why can't this just be a game that you put out and it's an online mode? Like the days of old where, you know, the old Assassin's Creed games, even though they weren't very good, the online, it came out and it was out. I mean, I love the games, but the online modes themselves. Sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to scare you. I love the old Assassin's Creed games, but the online, the multiplayer components, they came out and that was it. You bought the game and you played the multiplayer, and then 10 or 15 years later, they shut it down. You know, why don't we have that anymore? Why is this, the whole studio is going to be 24/7 on the multiplayer? That kind of sucks, but I do think it's good for a studio as talented, especially at single player games as Naughty Dog is, that through whatever means they came to realize it, that they decided that they didn't want to divert more resources into it. It just sucks because the opportunity cost alone. I mean, we talk about the opportunity cost on something like Sunset Overdrive. They could have made something else that made more money, but they made $567. This is never going to make any money. And it probably cost them $100 million or more for the time it's been in development. So that opportunity cost definitely sucks. But I'm glad they figured it out now than having it flop or, you know, peter out later on. So, excuse me. You got a little tickle going on there. Boys, it's time to talk about what we have been playing. What we have been playing. Dave, yours is the most fascinating and will probably take the most time by far. So let's go to you first.
Yeah, so I have been playing nothing new this week. I played a little bit of Luigi's Mansion and Mario Wonder earlier this week, but that's nothing new. I got the dreaded gamer injury. I was attacked by a mandolin earlier this week while I was slicing some tomatoes.
Okay, I needed to ask, was it the mandolin that you play music with or that you slice things with?
No, yeah, okay. Slice. And I don't know if you guys have ever used a mandolin before, but if you get cut by them, it's fucking bad. Yeah. And this was like, I think like a bee's dick away from being stitches, so I'm kind of lucky. But yeah, it was right on my thumb, and you can't really see it there, but I just stopped wearing a bandage full-time today. So yeah, I really for it, I couldn't really. I suppose I could have done mouse and keyboard, but I looked through my Steam library and there was nothing I really felt like playing. So I spent the week on the gaming IR, as it were. So
yeah,
nothing new from me this week, unfortunately.
All right. Oh, by the way, before we go any further, there was a correction to the correction earlier. We were corrected saying that Namco got a patent for interactable loading screens, then a correction followed up that said it was mini games in loading screens. So I guess that's kind of a similar thing. But anyway, I still don't know if that correction is correct, but I'm reading it because it was given. Brandon, you're up, and you've been playing one game all week. And I have noted this on several occasions that you've been playing just an insane amount of this game.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah, I've been only playing Lethal Company. Happily, honestly, it's been a lot of fun, and I've been queuing a lot with random people, which has been very interesting socially. This game is amazing. I've talked at length about it. There's nothing new to add there, but I do want to give a little story time to one of the lobbies I had joined. I had hosted it, actually, so I was the leader. The matchmaking's kind of weird in this game. I feel like they didn't expect as many people to be playing it, so it's kind of unstable at points. There's difficulties joining people. You don't always get people to join. Sometimes you wait like 15, 20 minutes and nobody joins. So, that was me. I was sitting in a lobby waiting for people to join. And somebody joined. And I waited a little bit. Was just saying, hey, what's up? You got a mic? And the voice that came out shortly after, I'm telling you guys, he had to be 8 years old. It was probably just the most meek little voice that I've ever heard. And I was sticking around, you know, I was having an okay time. Many people joined and instantly heard this little kid's voice and then just left. And he was like, oh man, like, I don't know what, you know, every time I get into a lobby, it says I disconnect, which means that they kicked you. Yeah. And he's like, I've been trying to play this game and, you know, yada, yada. And so I played a couple rounds with him and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Okay. And so I just crouched in place and didn't talk for a while and then disconnected because I felt bad. I felt really bad. I felt really bad because he was a nice little kid, whatever. And so I host a new lobby like an idiot.
Are you sure you left because of he was a little kid or was it because of the court order?
We're not going to talk about that. Legally, I can't. So me, like an idiot, instantly starts up a new lobby with the same name. And guess what? He rejoins the same lobby.
Hey, what happened, man?
Hey, and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I disconnected. Oh, that's my fault. You know, and so now I'm feeling bad, right? I just feel bad. And then he starts sob storying me, and I actually did feel a little bit bad. He was like, yeah, every time I join, people are very nice, and this is the only lobby that I can join. I've been trying to play this game, but I can never join any lobbies, and I just want to play so bad. I've watched all these YouTube videos, but I haven't really played because I know nobody stays. And so lo and behold, I felt bad then, and so I hung out with him until his bedtime, and then he left.
Did you actually play though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't any good, but
yeah.
It was kind of endearing. I'm not like a huge fan of kids. Ben's kids are probably some of the only kids I actually like. This kid was all right, and I will note something else. He friend requested me on Steam, and then he kept asking. He's like, "All right, you know, before I get off for bed, can you accept my thing?" And I'm like, I only have one screen. I'm not going to switch between screens right now. And then he asked me again. He just kept doubling down. And I was like, he's going to sit in friend purgatory. I don't know if you guys know what this is, but on yeah. on all of my social media apps, all of them, I like to collect as many people in purgatory as I possibly can. I don't deny your friend request or accept it. I leave you there so that way you can never send me another one again. And that way you're like, maybe he just didn't see it. Maybe he just didn't see it. You leave them in purgatory. And I swear to God, I have to have like 50 or 60 on Facebook. I have dozens on Instagram. And now this kid's staying in purgatory. I'm sorry, kid. You're a nice kid. I was incredibly nice to him. Incredibly nice. And I think I was the only person that had ever been nice to him on this game. I think he actually said that. But yeah, he's going to stay there because what he got off to, he's like, all right, yeah, I'll be on tomorrow night. And I'm like, I see where this is going.
Uh-huh.
We're not doing this. You're really nice. You're really nice, dude. And I'm sure you're going to be awesome one day. But
Brandon's got a stand now. Like, he's just at home scribbling letters to you. Have you accepted my friend request? Play Lethal Company with me.
It's not happening. So, but yeah, that was my interesting story.
For you, man.
I've also had some other just kind of interesting things happen. I hosted a different lobby, and there were people that joined me with that all lived within an hour of me, which is really strange. So I guess that's probably the way the servers work, but it was just kind of funny how it worked. So
it's really weird. You told me about that. You said it was three women that you asked them all where they live. That's kind of creepy.
Ayo. Ayo. Why you?
Where did the little kid live?
You weren't incriminating. I'm not asking the little kid where he lives.
Okay, you didn't ask him, but you asked the women. Okay.
Dude, why are you guys going to flame me on the podcast?
It's perfectly legal.
I've asked many people where they live. I'm like, hey, do you live on the East Coast? You know, I don't start with like, hey, where are you from? You know, right. I'm like, are you on this side of the country?
What's your address?
Right. Yeah. I'm not like that. But yeah, it was really funny.
You sound tasty. What's your postal code?
Right. Do you have a P.O. box?
I want to try to meet you at the USPS office.
Yeah.
Brandon, I wanted to ask you, I've also been playing a good bit of Lethal Company, played a lot with you, but I wanted to ask you, I see you get in, not, I don't want to say ruts because that has a negative connotation, but you know what I mean, ruts, where you get on one game and you stick on it for a while.
Sure.
But most of the time, those are games that you're consistently, all the time, playing with friends.
Right.
I feel like. Yeah. There's some exceptions, of course. Sure. But Lethal Company is a game that you are very much okay. If none of your friends can play, nobody's playing, whatever, you'll gladly hop on with just a bunch of randoms. And I feel like gladly. Lethal Company... Well, okay. That's where we're going here. Yeah. I feel like Lethal Company is an amazing game, but I really like it with people I know because I love the reactions, and I love the interactions, and I love the social aspect of the game. But for you jumping on with a bunch of randoms all the time, you know, what is it that drives you to do that other than just wanting to play the game? And do you think that's, I don't know, what's your experience like with not mostly but a lot of times playing with people you don't know?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I probably have 20 some hours with randoms at this point, but it's interesting. I think that mostly the reason I am sticking around, like, I obviously love the game, but I feel like it does provide interesting social interactions, and not like I'm deprived of that. I mean, I talk for 9 hours a day at work to people, but it's something about this game, and I think Among Us has like a similar quality to it. I don't know if it's just the type of social game it is, where it is a lot of the fun is the social aspect. But yeah, it's just kind of clicking with me so far, and it's been kind of interesting. Not all interesting, I will say that. I've had some not so good experiences, but mostly they've been really good. And I think that's kind of helped to kind of harbor my interest in continuing to be social on this game, is that a lot of the people that I have played with have been super cool. And that's probably something that's unique to the game, because I could equally, you know, do this sort of thing on a game like Call of Duty, and it would be a vastly, vastly different experience. So I think that's one part, just being interested in socializing in this way. And a second part, in the community has been pretty good. So,
yeah, nice. So for me, I've been playing Lethal Company as well. I don't really have anything new to report. No cool stories like Brandon has. I've been playing some more Fortnite, both Battle Royale, although less Battle Royale lately. More Lego and more racing. I'm happy to report. Last week, I think I was like just barely in the bronze or silver category. I'm now in the top platinum category in Rocket Racing, which I don't really love. I just feel compelled to do this for some reason. I need to at least one time get to the top level of whatever it's called, Epic, or I think it's Epic. I need to get there, and then I'll never play it again. But I feel compelled that I need to do it for some reason. And then the Fortnite Lego is obviously fantastic. We haven't been playing that as much, but I did jump in a few times this week. But the big thing I've been spending my time on when I've been gaming this week is Valheim. Valheim, I checked it out a couple times for like an hour a piece back a couple years ago. And every time I had checked it out, it was right after we had just played something else that was a survival crafting game. If you know me, survival crafting games are my crack. Like I absolutely love the building. I love the crafting. I love the finding of resources. I love gathering, chopping down trees for no reason. Like that's me. That's what I would like to do for some reason. It's a very particular type of OCD, I suppose. And of course, you know, the whole story and exploration, that's fun too, but my real focus is on building. With Valheim, it's cool because the part of the game, like, you need to upgrade everything before you can progress and before you can really explore, which is exactly my jam. I love that. I hate games that you could go in, like Elden Ring, you could go in with, like, the base weapon and kill the final boss if you're good enough. I mean, that's cool, but it's cool, that's a big feat, but that I like games where you have to build to that point. So anyway, I've been playing a lot of Valheim and really enjoying it. It hit the right time for me this time. I've checked it out repeatedly because I can see what's good there, but it never stuck. But this time it's sticking a little bit. And it's such a big game. There's so much to explore, so much to do, so much to build, so much to craft. I've probably discovered like way less than half the recipes in the game totally at this point. And I've probably got 20 hours in it this week, 15 to 20 hours in it this week. So it's definitely been a good time for me, and I'm planning on playing a lot more. Brandon and Dave, you're welcome to join, of course. It is on Game Pass. Lockmort, my friend Lockmort, bought it for me on Steam because I think it was on sale for like $10 or something, and then rented us a private server. So you too, this is not an invitation to our audience. Sorry, guys. I like you, but not that much. But you two are welcome to join me anytime you like. Just let me know. And yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Excuse me again. I got a tickle in my throat. I felt like that would be weird to cough on the mic and just like let the audience suffer through it. But I think that's about all we have for you this week. That's what we've been playing. That's the news. We appreciate you guys hanging out here every Tuesday night on YouTube over at Ben is Handsome YT, and I think most of the time on the Handsome Phantom channel as well, as long as I can get it to work. It didn't work last week, but I don't know why. That's another story entirely. Support us on Patreon over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. We appreciate it. It's especially valuable for those of you. We have many more people who listen on audio than are viewing us right now, and that's totally fine. We like you no matter where you're listening and whether you support or not. We'll like you even more if you come and hang out on the Discord at handsomephantom.com/discord. We won't like you less if you don't, but we will like you more if you do. Hope that wasn't too confusing. We appreciate it. We're going to hang out and figure out the episode title here. But we will see y'all next week. I think we're back on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And we'll go from there. Thanks and good night. The HP Podcast is sponsored by our proud patrons over at patreon.com/handsomephantom. The following members are at the $5 level, and we appreciate their contribution. Toby Ryland, Edward Walton, Josh Cummings, Poot, Boots, Passive Pixels, Edwin Castillo, Maurice Bays, H-Trons, Nuke Dukem, Derek O, Grabalicious, Benji Bop, and Link.